Ashbury falls into line with Emily Dickinson in that gnomic quality of Emily Dickinson's, that deep spirituality, and then also with Walt Whitman, that gray, gay poet who really sings of America in its vernacular, all-embracing democratic and vernacular way. So he's in that spirit, the Dickinson and Whitmanian quality. And then he comes out of Hart Crane, The Bridge, trying to, again, think about America in these expansive ways, but also, for me personally, deeply spiritual ways. But then he also fits into this great explosion of experimental work in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And by experimental work, I'm thinking of John Cage, the composer, Merce Cunningham, the dance choreographer and performer, but also certainly, for me, this is the deep connection here with the abstract expressionists, Jackson Pollock, Jane Frelicher, Larry Rivers, de Kooning, and so forth. I mean, Ashbery was a art critic. He went to Paris for about a decade and wrote art reviews for the International Herald Tribune, and then became an art editor for Art News and Newsweek. So he was very much in this milieu of collaborative, deep thinking about the process of art. So if you think about Cage and Cunningham or Rauschenberg or Jasper Johns or Motherwell or Jane Frelicher or Nell Blaine, Ashbery is there. And then he's also a conversationalist, and this is, I think, a great thing about Ashbery. He's part of a conversation with poets like Frank O'Hara or James Schuyler, and it's a conversation. When you read an Ashbery poem, and this is I'm kind of moving away from the conventional lit crit thing, but you enter into a conversation with Ashbery. There, you could put quotation marks around different parts of a poem because they're in different voices speaking to you. There's an intimacy and a privacy in John Ashbery's poetry that is just phenomenal. I don't find that maybe in any other poet except for perhaps Emily Dickinson. You feel very close to Emily Dickinson as she's whispering about feeling the rush of a hummingbird close by or nearly stepping on a snake in the garden or something like that. You feel Dickinson's proximity. And I think you find that also with John Ashbery. His language is playful. It's difficult sometimes. It's parodic. It's often very lyrical. But you're moving across the spectrum. Just as in a conversation with a close friend, you're moving, well, you know, talking about whatever happened today, to something really painful or powerful or illuminating, all in a split second or so. You know, this proximity, both between the high and low language, the deeply emotional language to the more playful language. You find that in Ashbery. And that brings me to another point, the attentiveness that Ashbery has to language. He's listening. He's a perfect listener in some ways. He's like a folklorist. Who was the collector of so much folk music? John
Hammond.
John Hammond, for example. He's listening to, like an ethnographer, listening to the pulse of American vernacular. So you find, you know, a phrase in any of his poems that may be just right out of a conversation you had at Miller's hardware store. You know, crazy weather we're having, right? So, you know, that's crazy weather is the title of a poem of his. And it begins with that upstate New York, because, of course, he grew up in Sodus, New York, just, you know, 30, 40 miles north of us, born in Rochester, grew up on an apple orchard in Sodus. He has that rural, upstate New York sensibility. He looks at the landscape. He attends to the landscape that he moves through, whether it's in upstate New York or New York City or Paris. But he also attends to the landscape of language. And that's the real beauty here. And if we can kind of do a synesthesic shift, Ashbery's commented that his poetry can be best understood as music. So it's that immersive quality of Ashbery. You can't think of his poems as poems where you have to extract a meaning in that all-cap sense of meaning. Instead, I think it's more about meaningfulness as you enter into a process of making meaning, of understanding the process of thinking, of reflecting. So it's this meaningfulness that is so much for me the joy of reading an Ashbery poem. A poem of his could be as simple as a four-line poem, "Who Will Do the Kissing," which is in his late 2016 Commotion of the Birds, and this is the entire poem, it's a four-line poem. "You will not have heard that. What about the leftover duck? Who will do the kissing? They have gone ice skating." Totally nonsensical, right? How can you make sense of that? Someone listening to this will say that I could have written that, or, you know, somebody who goes and looks at a Jackson Pollock painting, as I have heard many times, my five-year-old could do that, right? But it's so elegant, like E equals MC squared. Anyone could have written E equals MC squared, right? No, only Einstein could have done that. In fact, Ashbery's maternal grandfather was a physicist, a professor of physics at the University of Rochester. And I think there is a certain elegance in the way in which Ashbery puts things together, mass and speed of light together to make a poem. And, well, we can't really figure out what this poem, "Who Will Do the Kissing," really is about, can we? We find it instead, it's all about energy, just like Einstein's quote, I think. It's this energy of motion, of, well, we have these four lines. How will we construct something meaningful? Not a message, but just how will we make sense of it? How do we think about things? And certainly that is what we do just in our daily lives. If we're reflective, thoughtful beings, we go about thinking about things. And, well, there's something there and something there. How do I put them together? What relationships are there between these two things? Ask a theater director or a choreographer. You put two people on stage and suddenly there's a narrative. Even if they don't do a darn thing for the whole 9 hours that they're on stage, there's a narrative there. There's a meaning that you construct as you watch. So this little tiny poem is like a puzzle piece. It's a language game. In fact, one of Ashbery's later collections is called Chinese Whispers. And, you know, that's about language, the language game of watching, or listening, I should say, listening to a phrase go around the circle and come back, and it's completely different. Everyone whispering the same, what they think is the same thing, and by the time it reaches you again, it's a whole new thing. That's very much like Ashbery's poems in some ways. But then Ashbery is also, as I said earlier, I think a spiritual poet. And you look at some of his work, and there are these moments. I'm going to read a short poem called "Variant," and this is from Houseboat Days from 1977. And bear in mind, Ashbery has published about, I think, I think he's up to, at the time of his death, about 28 different collections of poetry. So this is a writer who writes, and obviously not every poem is going to be a pearl, but it's about the process, about writing, and then about thinking and reflecting. Variant. Sometimes a word will start it, like hands and feet, sun and gloves. The way is fraught with danger, you say, and I notice the word fraught as you are telling me about huge secret valleys some distance from the mired fighting. But always, lightly wooded as they are, more deeply involved with the outcome that will someday paste a black bleeding label in the sky. But until then, the echo flowing freely in corridors, alleys, and tame, surprised places far from anywhere will be automatically locked out. Vox clamans, do you see? End of tomorrow. Don't try to start the car or look deeper into the eternal wimpling of the sky. Luster on luster, transparency floated onto the topmost layer until the whole thing overflows like a silver wedding cake or Christmas tree in a cascade of tears. Absolutely gorgeous poem. And it starts off with that sense of attentiveness. I notice the word fraught. And then it takes off from that, that one tiny detail. Ashbery builds out a poem that, well, if you become the attentive reader, you'll catch John Gower writing about the 1381 peasant revolt, or John the Baptist, Vox clamans, the cry in the wilderness. What are these references doing in this poem? Where is this poem located? I think it's located in someone thinking about the way poetry or a dance or a painting or a play or a conversation starts things. Sometimes a word will start it like hands and feet, sun and gloves, just random, arbitrary words. So it's that arbitrariness, that experiment, that playfulness with language, and then that gorgeous in a cascade of tears at the very end. Really powerful.